Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast. My name is Rich Ferraro and we're having a bit of a special conversation this weekend, partly because it's the international break, but partly because it also comes at the end of what has been a turbulent and tempestuous week at the City Ground. A week that started with a points deduction for the PSR breaches and ended with, bizarrely enough, the Prime Minister coming to visit the City Ground, and in between, all kinds of discussion and debates going on between the fans as well. So in today's podcast, we will focus mainly upon that points deduction, what the implications are, not only for Forest, but for football as a whole. And we will also have a little chat about how Forest are doing in terms of where they are now compared to where they were when Steve Cooper was given the boot. I'm joined by a number of our regular panellists, and before I introduce you, I just want you to give me a feeling about whether you think a four-point deduction was fair. So, starting with you, Baz.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, short but sweet. Okay, let's move on to George Edwards.
First of all, a tempestuous week. I'm learning new vocab every day. I think 4 points is good, it's fair, it's quite lenient, and I think Forest should take that in fairness.
Okay, and last but not least, Stephen Topliss.
Yeah, I think 4 points is fair. Take it and run, and just try and make the points back up now.
Okay, so we will talk a little bit more about kind of what led to the four-point deduction and the process that the club went through. But obviously one of the things that's going to be on our mind, and by the time you hear this, listener, may well have been resolved already, is the idea of whether Forest should be appealing and whether that will be a worthwhile road to go down. So, George, I'm going to come to you first. I guess the issues about an appeal are, firstly, that if we appeal and it's successful, well, hey, happy days. But if you appeal and it's not successful, it seems as though there's the prospect of actually getting the points deduction increased. So, bit of jeopardy there, yeah?
And that would be such a Forest thing to do, wouldn't it, to appeal and then go down by a point that we've lost on the appeal. Now, I don't think Forest should appeal, in fairness. I think the fans, the players, the club, everyone's been screaming out for a bit of clarity on the situation. And I think knowing what the goal is, knowing what the end target is, knowing we've got 9 games to outscore Luton by a maximum, I guess, of 2 points, 1 point plus goal difference, so 2 points to be safe. We've got a better run in than them. I think arguably we've got a better squad. And against Luton, I think we showed for large periods we were better. And until, as we'll get to, I'm sure the manager threw the towel in, we were the better team. So I think 4 points is possibly best case scenario. On appeal, what are we going to get back? I mean, they gave us mitigation for our good behaviour. So if we appeal, does that not then maybe diminish that argument and we get those 2 points back against us? So personally, I think you're risking maybe getting 1 point, 2 points max back to maybe have that lost. And 4 points is a lot more surmountable than six would be, I think. So personally, I'd just like to see us take the situation, take these 9 games and make up that gap.
Yeah, Baz, on that point, so Maradona in the Midlands and I discussed in our Friday Five podcast most recently that, you know, it's just one of those things where you take your medicine. But the other thing we touched upon is that it does seem as though Nick DeMarco KC has earned his corn.
Yeah, I think part of the worry with, well, so yes, that's definitely, if you hear on the Everton responses, it's like, yeah, how does this make any sense whatsoever? So, yeah, he's obviously done a very, very good job there as far as that goes. And the problem with appealing as well is we're already getting a reputation for whining about absolutely everything. And the impression I get is a lot of people see us as just complaining about stuff, whether it's justified or not. So I think the fact that we've got away with a 4-point one when their starting position was 8 points and Everton obviously started with 10 points for a smaller breach, I think, yeah, the idea of appealing is a terrible one.
And just to stay with you very briefly, Baz, that's an important point, isn't it? Because with refereeing, with PSR, with all of these other factors, let's ignore the media, you know, the arguments about how we're portrayed in the media. But just in terms of our own reactions to things as a club and as a fan base, we get caught in the bubble, don't we? But it does seem as though, broadly speaking, fans of other clubs and other clubs generally are going, whatever, you know, it's like they're not bothered about our reactions to it. They're just seeing us as a club that's lurching from one situation to another.
Yeah, I think that's like with the refereeing, every fan of every club will say, yeah, we've been on the end of unjust decisions and VAR. I do think it's slightly different for us in that we've had maybe a bit more of game-changing decisions go against us, but every fan will say, yeah, that's what happens. So I guess we are getting a reputation for whining about stuff, which is happening.
And you know, for you, listener, if you didn't hear it, then a couple of weeks ago, Baz did point out that even just the ones that we've had apologies from Pogmol, that makes a difference of 4 to 6 points, which is the difference between us being in the relegation zone and not, points deduction or not. Stephen, coming to you, I think, yeah, take our medicine, get on with it, seems to be the consensus amongst the panel. Do you have anything to add to that?
I think with the points deduction, again, you've got to come back to the situation we're in and looking at why this has happened in the first place. And the club have got to learn from it moving forward, because there is a chance that this points deduction could send Forest down and be the difference between survival and relegation. And I hope that the club now learns from their mistakes and the things that have happened over the last, what, year to 18 months in terms of spending and players being brought in to the level they were, and learn from it, take your medicine and just be better in the future.
George?
Now, we acknowledge the club have made mistakes, right? But I've got to say that I'm actually quite proud of Forest, that they came up to the league and these rules that were in place that were put them right at the bottom of the league in terms of how much they could spend, everything was against them. They didn't vote those rules in. But instead of stringently, I guess, staying by the rules and maybe not buying the players we would have and getting beat 4-5, 7-0, 8-0 every week, Forest came up, stuck two fingers up to those rules and thought, actually, we're going to give ourselves a fighting chance. And some of it wasn't clever. We'll get on to probably the recruitment that wasn't the best and things like that. But in the end, Forest thought, no, we're going to give ourselves a shot in this league. We're going to create some memories that the fan base will remember and cherish forever. And at the end of the day, we're going to stay up. And I'm sure if you'd have given the club this situation 2 years ago, that you'd stay up in the first year and then points deduction or not, you'd have 9 games to outscore Luton by 2 points. I think the club would have taken it. So as much as Forest have broken the rules, they've got to learn from it. They've given themselves a shot. And I think that's all they could have done in this situation.
Other opinions may be available. Let's start with Baz.
Well, so I said I've had a quick, very, very brief look through some of the data. And what everyone knows is we bought in however many, 42 players or whatever it is over the last two seasons. We spent our net transfer spending, so how much income versus expenditure, last season was 190, according to the stats I've got. And this season was 42, I think. So 200 and something million. But if you compare that to, say, last season, Southampton had a net spend of 146 million. You look at Burnley this season, they spent 110 million and they're completely falling out of the league. You got Sheffield United, who spent 36 million and they're probably the worst team I've seen. So the spending that we've done isn't disproportionate to what's needed. The problem is we were hamstrung by our situation. And just to add to that, so you've got teams like Bournemouth. So Bournemouth, their net spend over the last 2 years is 125 and where's the other one? 83. So not far off what we've spent. But the difference is that they had parachute payments, so they were able to afford it in a way that we weren't. So this is the thing that gets me about it, is the way the rules are designed. It's basically saying to all the clubs, stay in your lane. And even when they redesign the rules for next season, which is going to be based on revenue, that's also saying stay in your lane, because there's two ways of growing your revenue. One is to get success on the pitch and grow your brand globally. And then two is to bring in more fans to the stadium. And we've seen how well that's going, bringing in more fans to the stadium in our case, and getting success on the pitch to grow the brand. Well, you have to get success on the pitch first. So that the entire thing seems to be, we're not spending that much more than everyone else, but we get punished by the rules because they're set against us.
Okay. And staying with you on this one, Baz, I mean, I guess the point you're making is that Southampton spent such and such an amount and they went down. Burnley have spent a huge amount and they're going down as, again, one of most likely one of the worst teams in Premier League history, along with Sheffield United. But Forest came up with half a squad and no parachute payments because we'd been out of the top flight for 23 years.
Yeah, and we didn't spend that much more than those other clubs, and we squeaked it by one point. So I think that the amount that we spent is the bare minimum you have to spend, but it's impossible.
Okay. And Kieran Maguire made the point, the football finance expert, he made the point that Forest came up with half a squad. The net worth of our squad when we came up, according to Maguire's figures, was £12 million, which is comfortably the least assets that any Premier League squad had at the start of last season. So we've had this debate many, many times before about how we needed to spend a significant amount of money just to have enough players to compete. Now, of course, Forest did overspend, and they did also sign way more players than they needed. And Stephen, that comes back to me to, I hesitate to use the word strategy, and regular listeners will have heard me talk about this before, but let's say the recruitment policy, which in this case was, let's sign a squad so that if we stay up, we have Premier League players, but if we go down, we've got a team to compete in the Championship. And the trouble is with that is that whatever the eventuality is, you're going to be spending a lot more money than you needed to.
Yeah, of course. And that was the situation that Forest found themselves in. And even though I am critical of the club in terms of how they've broken the rules and they knew what the limits were, I am glad that they at least had a go and tried to compete, because had we gone into that season with that half a squad and just tried to fill it with players just so that we had a team to compete, it could have been a very ugly season. We could have been rock bottom and gone by March, you know. But yeah, that the rules really are anti-competitive. When you really dig into it, I understand this process of trying to keep clubs, you know, on the right side of the line and avoiding what happened to Portsmouth. But there's got to be more available to clubs like Forest, who came up by surprise, really. I don't think we were expecting to go up that season, and we hadn't had parachute payments. There's got to be something there to help those kind of clubs at least have a chance of competing in the Premier League. Look at the two teams we came up with, Fulham and Bournemouth. Nobody's looking at their financial situations, but they had parachute payments and they'd been in the Premier League more recently than we had. So they'd already got some Premier League players in the squad and that extra buffer of Premier League money from their previous spells in the league. We didn't have that. So that does, to me, that paints a question to the rule makers of, well, clearly you don't want new teams coming into the Premier League and trying to establish themselves. It's anti-competitive. And what I will say for Forest is, I thought the statement that they put out, when was it? Tuesday afternoon, was superb. Mm-hmm. Absolutely on the money. And a real highlight, I think, as to the unfairness of the rules and the way that the league has been set up. And it was quite telling that other fans of other clubs weren't piling into Forest and saying, oh, you're just moaning and being whiny. They actually agreed with it and said, no, this is a brilliant statement that really makes some important points.
Yeah, we'll come back to the statement in a bit more detail in just a minute. George, you wanted to jump in?
Well, I've got a slightly probably unpopular opinion on this, right? And some of the things I say might be wrong, so you can stop me if I am right. But I do have a slight degree of sympathy for the Prem on this, because rules like this, do they not have to be voted in by the clubs anyway, or mm-hmm. not? So I'm under this understanding that these rules came in 2015-16, which Leicester and Everton were in the league. Forest weren't, right? But Leicester and Everton were in the league, so they clearly voted it in. Now, I do think the threat of independent regulation has had it shifted the Premier League's view on it, because I doubt that Everton are the first club to deserve a deduction since then. So I think the threat of that has heightened it. But 14 of the 20 clubs have to vote for something for it to come in. So that means it's likely that one of, if not both, of Everton or Leicester voted to have the rules implemented, and then had to stick by it. And the Premier League then have a duty, I guess, to the clubs that voted it in, and that's not just the big six, that's the 14, 15, 16 who voted it in, to hold clubs accountable to it. And they're not going to see that Forest or Everton breached by this amount and then ignore it. And the other thing is, and Forest in their statement worded it quite well, but there's been a lot about the Premier League this, the Premier League that, right? It's the commission that actually decide the points deduction. The commission decided Everton had the initial 10 points. Regardless of what the Premier League suggested, the commission come to their final decision. They decided firstly Everton got 10, then 6, and then us 4. So it's not like it's the Premier League's final decision. And if you're in a court and there's a defence, the clubs, the prosecution, the Premier League, the judge makes a ruling, the judge isn't going to then, the prosecution aren't going to then say, actually reduce the sentence, are they? So that's where I have a little bit of sympathy. And on the difference, because Everton fans are not happy about the difference between Forest and Everton, right? I think the big difference in the cases, if you read the case files, was the aggravating factors. Forest got points back for being cooperative with the league. But from what I can gather, from what I've seen in the media and the Everton and the Forest case reports, Everton, I said it on this pod actually, that Everton should have been charged last season. It's unfair they're being charged twice. But it looks like, if you read a brink of the facts, that they delayed it and misled the Premier League and lied to them to get their deduction and the hearing scheduled to this season. Because if they'd have got any, they stood up by 2 points last season. If they got any, they'd be in the Championship. So that's, I don't know, I just feel, I mean, the rules are unfair. We get the rules that are not right and don't give the clubs a chance to compete. But I don't feel like it's all on the Premier League, like a lot of people are saying.
Yeah, well, okay, and Baz is wanting to jump in there. So just to highlight, I think the couple of things that you touched upon that are pertinent in the difference between Forest and Everton is that Forest were cooperative and got 2 points in terms of those mitigations of being cooperative, and Everton, yes, they were deemed to have misled or provided misleading documents. And then the other thing is to do with sporting advantage or competitive advantage, which, again, I think it's something we can talk about in a little bit more detail, but I want to bring Baz in before we forget that he was wanting to come in.
Yeah, I mean, as I understand it as well, so at the start of each season, all the clubs have to sign up and say that they agree with these rules. So it's not like there was any sort of, lack of knowledge on the part of Forest. And as I understand it, the chief financial officer was warning Forest that they were going to breach it quite early on. So it's not like the Forest went into this blind. So why the club acted in the way that it did is something possibly we need to discuss. But the thing with with Leicester as well is the Premier League, the rules themselves simply don't make any sense. So you were, like George was saying there, about how the commission is the one that comes up with the punishment, which is a decision that the Premier League made, but they also made the decision that the commission is not allowed to take precedent. So the fact that Everton got 10 points and Forest got 4 points, those are not allowed to influence any future decisions, which means that what we're going to get is a whole inconsistent set of rulings with no pattern between them. And that's on the Premier League for making that choice.
But also, the in terms of the ruling, in terms of the amount of points that Forest did get deducted, it made clear reference to the points that Everton were deducted, the reasons why Everton had those deductions, and the reasons why Forest deductions are less. So, yeah, there was a precedent. But
what it means is that you're not allowed to use it as I understand it, you're not allowed to use it as a precedent. So if in 3 years' time someone breaches by 36 million, they're not allowed to say, ah, well, Forest had 6 or 4 points deducted because of 36 million, so therefore we should get the same.
Is that also so that when Man City finally do get their 115 charges, they can just get away with a slap on the wrist?
Of course.
Okay. Stephen, you brought up earlier the statements that the club put out, and it was, I mean, it was excoriating, wasn't it? And as you said, I think a lot of fans of opposing clubs said, you know what, they're making some good points here. And in summary, saying we're extremely disappointed with the decision of the commission to do that. However, we thank the commission for dealing with this in an expedited basis. We're extremely dismayed by the tone and content of the Premier League submissions. So they're very firmly pinning this on the Premier League. So there's a whole lot of other stuff there. They're talking about the unfairness of it. They're talking about the communication between the club and the Premier League, about the Brennan Johnson situation. And we've talked in the past, Stephen, about how it's absolutely insane that trying to demand an extra £15 million for your top asset is something that seems to breach profit and sustainability regulations, which is a related, very strongly related, but slightly separate argument, bearing in mind that we've said that clubs know the rules and they sign up to that. So with that statement, we're getting some credit in terms of saying, well, the rules are ridiculous. And Everton fans in particular have said, I really wish our club had made a statement like that. But of course, I guess they're not going to while they're still awaiting their punishment for the second breach. I mean, it makes a point us as fans have been saying, and even on this podcast, of it's not fair. If you come up like this, then you've got no chance. However, I'm going to put it to you, Stephen, that Luton are doing it with a net spend of 20 million and they're giving themselves a chance of surviving.
Well, that comes back to strategy in transfers and getting your recruitment right off the pitch, because you could argue that Forest really, under Marinakis, have never had a settled squad in, what, 5-6 years of ownership. Players have come and gone at an alarming rate in that period. The only time really that the club has had some stability was when Dane Murphy was brought in and then Steve Cooper was brought in, and we had stability for that promotion season. We got a team settled. We knew exactly, or near enough exactly, who was going to play week in, week out, and we were successful off the back of it. And then we get into the Premier League and Marinakis and Son and a few others wanted to get involved again and were sticking their oar in with transfers. And that, again, that comes back to the overarching strategy, because you look at Luton, they've got a settled squad. They know exactly what they are, how they want to play. Those players, a lot of them played together in the Championship for a few years. They had a couple of seasons where they were near the top of that league before eventually going up. So they were more settled, more stable than we were coming into the Premier League. I think any sort of turnover of players and any lack of stability in the Forest squad comes from the top for me. And again, it's boardroom strategy and people probably getting involved in transfers who shouldn't have been, really, if you're being critical.
And Baz, you and I have made the point that, you know, having, well, we watched Forest in the Championship for a long time and in League One. And before that, we had watched Forest in the Premier League. And over the years that we were down there, and this wasn't just an excuse to make up for the fact that we had no hope of anything, we'd said, in a way, I prefer Championship football to the Premier League, because the Premier League is just about the money. The Premier League is just about chasing a dream that is structurally, you know, you're unable to realise. Whereas in the Championship, at least you got a chance of being competitive if you get things right. And one of the things that I think is sad, which is a separate but related issue, is that we have lost that core of the championship squad who are together, who are a unit. And it feels like you basically sign a bunch of mercenaries who are hired guns to play for you in the Premier League. And I don't know if you have any feelings about that.
Oh, even worse than that, it's that Ryan Yates is the only one left mm-hmm. out of the Nottingham lads that are there is that was something to be proud of. The fact that we had in the Championship, even the likes of the little conveyor belt of players, like when Matty Cash came through, or Alex Martin, who always I used to like, all those players, not necessarily from Nottingham, but coming through the club in that way. I just don't see how that's going to happen if we do stay up. It's like, I can't see where that's going to come from, because...
And Forest currently have Cat 1 Academy status, which is on a temporary basis. They have to prove that they can keep it. But there's a bit of me thinking, despite Joe Gardner playing in the Cup and everything, there's a bit of me thinking, what's the point? Because they're not going to play in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I know, like, the fact is all the best talent, Man City hoovers them up. They go all around the country and hoovers up anyone. And if you've got a choice, who are you going to go for, Man City or Nottingham Forest? That's just how it's going to be.
Okay. And, George, just to kind of come back to that whole issue of Championship and Premiership and, Premier League. And I know you wanted to make your own point as well, but Championship versus Premier League and the rules. In the same week, we've discovered that Leicester are going to face sanction if they come up, and they're facing sanction if they don't come up. So either transfer embargo or points deduction. These are the rules that Leicester had signed up for, that they went in eyes wide open, and they were threatening to sue Everton and Forest. And yet now they are falling foul of the rules. And, there's a very simple how it started, how it's going kind of equation there, because they were condemning clubs who overspent and broke the rules. And it turns out they were doing it themselves all along.
Yeah, I believe Forest did it initially for the first Everton one, and they got punished, and then Leicester did it, and then they're getting punished. So it's like an endless.
But we didn't breach rules last season.
No. Yeah, correct. But, and I mean, you talk about the Championship there and their rules. I mean, I grew up with Forest, and I forgot sort of exactly when it was. But when I started going, Forest had a transfer embargo for about 2 years, and I actually grew up with that being the norm. And that used to be the sort of what the ban was. I mean, Chelsea had a transfer ban a few years ago. That was always what it was. And these point deductions only used to come in for administration like Derby or Wigan or Bury, who obviously in the end collapsed. And then it's almost like there is a change of narrative that now suddenly point deductions are coming for breaches. And I feel like that maybe hasn't been well communicated to the clubs. Obviously, they know about it now. But because of the nature of the three-year rolling period, that Everton particularly could be feeling it for the next 3 years. So that's why it feels like there's not been much communication. Just on the last point, you look at the mentioning about the youth players and how things have gone. You look at Gary Brazil leaving in the summer. I think that shows the mindset of the people at the top of the club, because he was such an integral part of bringing Forest youth through and development. And even, you know, when we get rid of a manager, as we inevitably do every season, Gary Brazil will be the one that steps in, and he's that familiar face. And him, the promotion squad leaving, it's like we had that one anomaly season in the Championship where everything just went right. We had some stability. But either side of it, it's just carnage. And that's a day in the life of Nottingham Forest.
As you mentioned the name Gary Brazil, all of us kind of nodded and looked slightly wistful. Stephen?
Yeah, just on that as well, I read a piece this week in The Athletic, and it mentioned when Forest came up, apparently Marinakis said that he liked Brighton's way of doing things and he wanted to follow the Brighton model, which is signing young players with a lot of promise and potential, bringing them on and then selling them for profit, which is great in theory. And for a club of our size, is probably quite a sensible approach, really, trying to establish ourselves in the Premier League. But it comes back to the point of, for all the Murillos and the Gibbs Whites and players like that you sign, why are you not trying to get those kind of players coming through your academy as well? Because as we saw with Brennan Johnson, that pure profit that we generated through selling Brennan Johnson, because technically we never paid a transfer fee for him. Again, what if you've got Category 1 status, invest some money into your academy to try and get Premier League standard youngsters coming through.
Bas?
I'm going to disagree with you there. So there's two things that I disagree with there. One, if we're bringing through players through the academy, whether they were born in Nottingham or whether we brought them in from somewhere else, they come through the academy from age 8 or whatever it is. I don't want to be doing that just to sell them on. I think that's terrible. I think they should be staying here.
And there's a structural issue there with the rules, yeah, isn't there? Which is that it's not right. It doesn't feel right
to sell our best players.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right that clubs are incentivized to sell homegrown talent. That's not what bringing homegrown talent through should lead to, is it? You should be able to celebrate having homegrown talent in your team. And as I say, if we look at, we've mentioned Chelsea and Man City. If you look at Chelsea and Man City, classic case in point, Cole Palmer was sold so that Man City could make pure profit on that. And now he's going on and doing it for Chelsea. It's like, well, if that was a Forest player who we'd sold for pure profit and was, you know, you don't equip a rival. Not that Chelsea are a rival to Man City this season, but it feels wrong. It feels wrong.
Yeah, and in the same vein, but this is a deeper point. Like, I'm very, very proud every time I see that Brennan Johnson scored for Spurs or that he's made an assist for Spurs. I feel very, very proud of him for that. But ultimately, and this comes right back to why we breach PSR, is there's this idea treating him as an asset, as a resource. He didn't want to go to Brentford. He's mm-hmm. a human being. Why are you going to force him to go somewhere where he doesn't want to work? He wanted to go to Spurs, and Spurs couldn't afford him until they sold Harry Kane. That's the crux of it, is he's a human being who didn't want to go to where he was being sent. So, and that's, I've not seen anyone else mention that at all.
Well, it's like, the club did allude to it, obviously, in terms of their mitigating circumstances. And the club did also point out that, you know, the transfer market is not like any other market that exists in any other industry, because it is contingent upon, and that idea about the Atletico Madrid bid, you know, is put in the report, but it's a bit of a red herring because it was never going to happen, because firstly, it came in too late. Secondly, it was still contingent upon Atleti selling someone else to be able to raise the funds. And so, yeah, it's been alluded to, but it's kind of been glossed over a little bit. So I think that's a reasonable point. As always, this episode of the 1865 podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. The league season is entering the business end, and Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised Forest fixture across the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter where you're based, you can catch every single minute of the action. Football is best enjoyed with your mates, so if you're not at the ground this month, then get a text in the group chat, head to your local Green King Sports venue to catch the game, and don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Now, it's back to your Forest Ramble podcast.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Welcome back to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast, with me, Rich Ferraro. Today, we've been talking about Forest's points deduction for breaching profit and sustainability regulations that they breached by selling a player to raise the money to make sure they covered their losses, although they did it too late, despite talking to the Premier League. So hence, they've got some mitigation. Let's go back very briefly to talk about Luton. And I'm talking about Luton off the pitch and on the pitch. So, George, we mentioned about Brighton, we mentioned about Brentford as well, and they're the main two examples of clubs who've come up and sustained themselves without having to end up being yo-yo clubs. And Luton are giving it a go despite a net spend of £20 million. And Luton also have a sustainable strategy, as Stephen mentioned earlier. Luton have also taken plenty of points off Forest this season. So, George, what do you think about the comparison between Forest and Luton, who are now our main rivals to be able to stay in the Premier League?
Well, firstly, I think most of us would actually want to see Luton stay up. Before we actually got thrust into the relegation battle, I'd love to see them stay up, because they remind me of Forest last season, not in terms of the lack of money spent and things like that, but in terms of the unity that was at the club and the fact they got promoted when they didn't expect to, and the story. And actually, if you look at their 11 against us, right, Thomas Kaminski, goalkeeper from the Championship, I think has been up there, top 10 keepers in the Prem. Tendon Mengi from United, who a few senior appearances and has been fantastic for them. Kabore from Man City, who actually is a right wing back and played left centre back. And Forrest at the Luton game didn't target that enough. I know Origi won a lot of headers, but why we didn't think of targeting a left centre back who's a right wing back, I don't know. They've got Ogbene, who they signed, I think, from a free from Rotherham, and he's been fantastic. Chong from Man United, Ross Barkley, a revelation. And it's almost like every one of theirs has been a hit, and it's been thought out and it's been targeted. And you can't say that for Forest. And Dave Murphy, I think, brought that, because I think when we were nearly on the crux of going up, it emerged that Murphy had two lists of player recruitment, one for the Premier League, one for the Championship. It was like it was all thought out. But then you think maybe we got up and Marinakis' son, maybe even the chairman, wanted to get involved, and everyone wanted to stick their nose in because, oh, Premier League, you know. And it's almost like it should have been just left to who it was the season before. So, yeah, you can draw comparisons to Luton and Forest and maybe wish Forest had done it in a Luton way, but every case is the same. I'm not really sure what I'm saying anymore, but yeah, I think you admire what Luton have done, given the clear disadvantage that they were at, and given that everyone said they'll finish 20th, they're going down without a whimper. Actually, they've got the best chance of anyone, and they've looked by far the most adept to the league promoted side out of the other two as well.
And, well, as George has lost his way, I'm going to hand over to Baz. But before I do, I'm going to point out that George lives in North London and is currently wearing orange. So, you know, make of that what you will.
Slight orange.
Yeah, a hint of orange, yes. OK. Baz, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that George made the point that there are similarities to Luton this season to us last season. And it's notable that Steve Cooper and Rob Edwards are good friends as well. There is part of me, and contradicting how I opened this thing, there is part of me that maybe not 25 million, but if we just spent 50 million and given that money to Steve Cooper to choose how to spend it, we'd have stayed up last season anyway. Again, probably by a single point, but the difference is that fighting spirit and that unity that he managed to put in place, and the fact that the unity spread all the way through the city ground. And that's what Luton have got. That's what we had last season. And that's what we don't have this season. So, yeah, maybe we didn't need to spend 190 million to stay up last season.
And Stephen, off air, when you were doing a match report recently, you and Tom were having a bit of a discussion, and Tom made the point that the 36 million or whatever it is breach, you could make that up by taking into account Omar Richards, signed on one leg, Emmanuel Dennis, who made about five appearances, and then at least two of the goalkeepers. Now, of course, not all of that was in one spending period. But what's interesting, Julien Biancon as well. And what's interesting is that none of those, as far as we're aware, are players that Steve Cooper actually chose.
Exactly. And it comes back to the point of where the strategy was and if there was any strategy behind player signings. George has made good examples there of how Luton have done it. They've identified the players they need. They've recognised their situation, that they can't just go out and splash £50 million on one player, or £30 million or whatever you want to call it. And it never felt like we had that sort of strategy. To me, the few signings that looked and felt like they had thought and ideas for the future behind them were the likes of Tyro Wonyi, who I think has returned well on his investment and has increased in value. Morgan Gibbs-White was very much a Steve Cooper signing, and I think we can say he's largely been a success at Forest, and we certainly would increase our money on him if we were to sell him. And it's that sort of thing. I think we got too excited coming up into the Premier League thinking, oh, well, we can get players like Jesse Lingard now. We can just throw some money around and we've got a bit of a net to do it in. And yeah, it's come back to bite us because we've had a lot of waste in the last 18 months. And even people like Jonjo Shelvey, for example, he was on quite big wages. You could even say Divock Origi, his wages reportedly £100,000 a week. And he's not returned a lot, really. And for that sort of salary. So, yeah, examples there of where the strategy hasn't really worked for me.
Although, let's point out that Shelvey was a Cooper signing, apparently. I will come to you, Baz, because you wanted to jump in.
I just wanted to say just the idea of Jonjo Shelvey is last season's Ross Barkley.
They both wore number six. So, now, George, you went to the Luton match. And so coming back to this, let's just talk about after the Luton match, there's a little bit of anger, a bit of frustration from the Forest fan base about, once again, not putting the result beyond doubt. And in your match report, you were very, very critical about the substitutions that Nuno made. And naturally, that brings comparisons between the failings of Nuno Espirito Santo in this match and some of the failings that were thrown at Steve Cooper's door in terms of being too conservative, in terms of making defensive substitutions, not going for matches. So how do you feel about the change of manager? I mean, Maradona the Midlands and I were discussing this in Friday Five, and both of us have been very vocal in the past of saying that we wouldn't have got rid of Steve Cooper. We'd have given Steve Cooper the means that he needed to do this, but that's not the way the club works, is it?
No, definitely not. I mean, no, I could never have been Steve out. I loved him. I still love him. And he'll always have a place in my heart. But I don't think you can deny, actually, that Forest are better under Nuno. Whether it's good enough is a different story. But we do look more competitive. We look more balanced in midfield. We look like scoring more goals. The games, I'd say, are more exciting. So it's an improvement. I think the mistake maybe with the manager and Nuno, and maybe this was the only way of bringing him in, but they signed him on a 2.5, 3.5, 4.5 year deal. It was a long contract and they didn't give themselves a way out, because I get getting rid of Cooper. You want to bring, I don't think it was the time mid-season to bring in someone like a Glasner or like a Potter, who is completely different, and the changes might take too long and by then you're lost. I think you're better off sticking with the same. Whether it was sticking with Cooper or whether it was bringing in someone similar to him in Nuno that was slightly different and has made it look slightly better, but you know, in the end of it, it's not that different. So I think that was probably the right thing to do. I just think a deal to the end of the season or an 18-month contract would have been enough. And I don't see why he would have turned that down, because he's had a failure at Tottenham and then been sacked from Saudi. I mean, I bet he was really sort of feeling lucky that he had this chance to come back into the Premier League after leaving Saudi a month ago. And yeah, the Luton game just felt exactly the same as the home game. It was like a carbon copy of it. Forest bring on subs, 75 minutes when we were coasting. Luton didn't look like scoring at all. And I don't want to repeat the points mentioned in the report, but we were absolutely coasting towards it. And then he brings on the changes, five at the back, basically says to Luton, come and attack us. And I know they only had a couple of corners and a few shots, but they had all of the ball, they had all of the momentum. And we lost in taking Wood and Origi off. Granted, Wood had to come off. We lost our outlet and we couldn't then get rid of the ball. And that actually is three consecutive away games, I think you can say that the manager has cost us points. Villa away, everyone thought, why is Niakate playing left back? And I thought he shouldn't have started. Then we conceded the first goal. He was clearly out of position. He could have taken him off for Toffolo. Then we conceded the same goal again. He could have taken him off for Toffolo. And granted, he did it at half time, but he could have done that far earlier. And then we move on to the Brighton game. I think he said after the game that his selection was for Brighton. I think he worries about the opposition too much. And I get it if you're playing City or Liverpool, who are so far superior to you that if you don't make slight changes, you're going to be naive and get, you know, battered. Luton, Villa, to an extent, and Brighton are similar on our level. But he went into the Brighton game with a plan to bring on the subs at 60 minutes and try and have an impact. But put your best squad out. Put your best squad out and try and give yourselves to be 2-0 up, because Brighton were there for the taking. And then he takes Gibbs White off. He's not got Reina or Ribeiro involved at all, which I find baffling, particularly Reina, who could have came on against Brighton. And he clearly, I don't know why he thought of taking Gibbs White off, but at least Reina would have been a decent choice to go off the bench. He put Kouyaté on, who is a midfielder, but he's probably the opposite midfielder to what Gibbs White brings you. And then we've touched on the Luton game and how we ended up with Nico Dominguez up front. That's never going to work. So there's been some baffling sort of decisions over the past few weeks. I mean, even little things like Harry Toffolo not being on set pieces. I love Morgan Gibbs-White, but he's shown time and time again that his set pieces aren't good enough.
You can't beat the first man.
No, exactly. I think we had about six corners in the second half at Luton. Three of them hit the first man. Two of them went but far post and no one got onto them. And one of them was on the money. That's not good enough. You look at Ross Bartley for Luton. They scored two goals from
every
corners,
single one
and
he
everyone
takes
was
causes
on the
danger.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you need. And Toffolo, under Cooper, showed time and time again he's the best crosser at the club by far. Even when Gibbs-White was off the pitch, it was Hudson-Odoi taking the corners, not Toffolo. And that must be a managerial thing because Toff was taking them before the manager came in. So I think Nuno has improved us, but I think there's not enough there to show us that he is the man to take us forward into that next level. If he keeps us up, the complexion, the love to him will change. But there's been decisions, particularly over the last few weeks, that have baffled me.
Baz, you wanted to come in, but I will also just point out that Nico Williams pointed out just at the end of the week that he's got a mean free kick on him as well. But Baz, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking back with hindsight and whatever, I think Steve Cooper made a lot of mistakes this season. And I wonder, one, if it was the pressure, and two, the deterioration of his relationship with the owner and the people around the owner that were causing him to make those mistakes. For example, sticking with the first thing Nuno did when he came in was stick Gibbs-White in the centre. And we all know that that's where he plays his best. And he was wasted playing out on the right in the way that Steve Cooper was doing that. But similarly, I do think, as George has alluded to, I think the pressure's getting to Nuno. We all had this image of him as this quiet man of few words, and you listen to his post-match interviews and you can feel that he's seething. And as you say, he's been making these slightly weird substitutions or tactical decisions. And I wonder if maybe it's getting to him as well. And that probably doesn't. And you look at the way the team plays, they don't look, and we've said this many, many times, you can see certain types of side look like relegation sides, and it's not necessarily the quality that they have, because there are players in our side who have a lot of quality. It's how their shoulders move when things go against them. And that seems to have crept into our game over the last five or six games, at the same time as Nuno seems to be feeling this extra pressure. Or showing this extra pressure. So I wonder if things are going a bit badly in the dressing room as well.
Stephen, a couple of things that come to my mind from that. So number one is that Steve Cooper's removal from the position of head coach wasn't just down to performance on the pitch, although that was a convenient, you know, we saw that there were a few times that Coops was in jeopardy. And related to that, there's an issue about pressure and confidence. And this time a year ago, we were in exactly the same situation, but with Coops as head coach rather than Nuno. And we were going, yeah, we're going down. The players don't look confident. The manager doesn't seem to feel confident. And confidence is a really important thing, because it means that as a head coach, you make decisions and you imbue real kind of, you get your players to walk those few inches taller. But confidence is also why we didn't win at Luton, because we should have been 3-4 up before they had a chance to equalise.
Yeah, we're in that bad habit of not being able to take our chances when they come and not being able to keep clean sheets at the other end. And that those things combined do make you a relegation outfit. We've seen it before with Forest down the years when they've ended up getting relegated. It's those kind of things that happen. But what I would say for Steve Cooper, if he was still here, is that he would use this points deduction as a way of galvanising the squad and fighting back and creating that us against them mentality, like he did last season when it looked like we were on our way out of the Premier League after the defeats to Leeds and even earlier in the season, that hammering we got at Leicester. I'm not sure yet whether Nuno can do the same. Perhaps he will, and perhaps this is the catalyst we need to sort of close ranks and kick on and get some points on the board and get some wins. But certainly Steve Cooper, I know, would have done that, because he's proven time and again in his time at Forest that situations like that he would use to his and the team's advantage.
George?
And something I've likened the situation to was, it's just a coincidence that Nuno was involved, but the best example I can think of is Nuno to Wolves is what Cooper was to us. Nuno brought Wolves from the Championship. And yeah, I guess they were more expected to go up than we were with the money they spent. But then he took them to seventh in the league and he took them to heights that they could not have seen. They had that bond. And then he left and they brought in Bruno Lage and then Lopetegui. And I don't think there was ever that rapport between the fan base because it was a bit, they were a bit too similar to Nuno and there wasn't that much change. There wasn't that much driving the team forward. And maybe they didn't have the personality to match Nuno. And then you look at Gary O'Neill now, who's really came in and captured the fan base. And yeah, you know, results speak. And if one of those managers had took them to eighth or seventh, whoever are in the league, I'm sure they'd have had that love. But Gary O'Neill has really been the change. And it's almost like maybe Forrest, Nuno has just got to be the stalking horse and then someone else can come in and take us forward. And on the point Stephen said, if you were to look at it and think, we've got 9 games to go, we've had this point deduction, we need unity. And I think it'll come. And I think Forza Garibaldi are on about doing something for the next home game, which is what's been needed. And, you know, fair play to them. Great work. But Forest need that. And if you could take Cooper or Nuno for these last 9 games, just for these 9 games, not thinking about the future, I think most fans would take Cooper just because we need that spirit that he brought for these last 9 games. And I really hope that Nuno can replicate that. And maybe he won't. It won't be a manager thing. Maybe the adversity we're in will do that. But Cooper, we know, would just get... I have no doubts, actually, now, that if we had Coops as a manager, we'd stay up. I'm slightly unsure as to Nuno. And that's not a tactical thing. It's a momentum and a feel-good thing.
And Baz, I'm going to finish off with you and just on those points. So, number one, the point that you've made many, many times over many, many years is that you can only really tell how well a manager is doing when the cards are stacked against them. And on a very similar and related point, so we've discussed about how Nuno is probably more tactically adept. He's certainly more experienced. He's got high level knowledge of the game that Coops was still learning as he was going along. But Cooper had this amazing charisma and personality. The players were his friends. They felt they could, you know, he was very much an arm around the shoulder kind of guy. He was in constant contact with his players. Nuno's a bit more distant. And this is not to say that he doesn't have good relationships with his players, but Coops was somebody who had everyone on side and therefore he could achieve stuff that was greater than the sum of its parts. And that's why we all talk so warmly about Steve Cooper.
Yeah, there is a little bit of me that wonders that all the players are his friends kind of thing. Maybe that fell apart a little bit this season because of the different profile of players we were trying to bring in. And if you think
Is we the club or is we Steve Cooper?
We the club.
Okay, well, and conversations end up coming back around to where they started, don't they?
Yeah. But yeah, if you just look at Steve Cooper's background, it's been in youth football. And it goes all the way back to, why did Brian Clough not succeed at Leeds United? Mm-hmm. Is it the stature of the players and how the manager can affect them? So, I mean, yeah, we'll never know. But I do agree with George that I'd feel a little bit more confident if it was Steve Cooper in charge for this last 9 matches.
Okay, and this is where we leave it, and very apt that there's a mention of Sir Brian on what would have been his 89th birthday. So we obviously hold him very dear in our hearts, and I think for most Forest fans of our generation, I think, you know, Steve Cooper is up there as maybe the second best manager that Forest have had in the modern era after Sir Brian. But this is where I say thank you very much to George Edwards, to Baz and to Stephen Topliss. Thank you also to the 1865 podcast and producer Romeo, who've both been beavering away in the background. And thank you to you for listening and joining us once again. If you like what you hear, then you know what to do. Tell other people, leave us a review, share our content. All of our links are on 1865.football. We also say a big thank you to Sports Social and to FanHub for joining us on our journey. We will be back with the Friday Five at the end of this week, and then obviously a report after the Crystal Palace match, as we do after every single Forest game. So it's been a turbulent week, and we want to say thank you for sticking with us and keep supporting the boys on the pitch. Come on, you Reds.
Sports Social Podcast Network.